Hi everyone, my name is João and I'm your host. Today with us we have Andrew. Andrew is tech principal at ThoughtWorks and he's a domain-driven design enthusiast. He's also he's a public speaker, you can find him online, and also he's an O'Reilly author. Thanks for your time and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. So let's throw the heuristic right away. And four-word heuristic. Maximize cohesion, minimize coupling. What has been your experience with this heuristic?
So it's a kind of classic heuristic, right? So I've listened to some of the other podcasts, and some of them are kind of ones that maybe you wouldn't come across so often. But this one is kind of, I guess I learned about it at university. When I did a MSc conversion course and learned Java programming and kind of touched on things like that. But even as I came up the ranks as a developer at a consultancy and then kind of became a dev lead and things, my first experience was kind of just, you know, directly at the code level. So in classes, between classes, across modules and all that kind of stuff. So I, you know, like most people, wrote Java code. I'm old enough to have done EJB style stuff. So we were kind of, you know, trying to, again, do modular monolith type stuff, even though before it was called that kind of thing. But then, I mean, what's interesting and maybe what we want to talk about a little bit is that was kind of accepted and what people did. What's very interesting to me now is, as a consultant still, we're, you know, and in a post-accelerate world, you know, if you want to set up a group of teams or a set of teams that you want to be kind of autonomous and you want them to the teams to be separate and you want to kind of minimize coupling and maximize cohesion across teams, that's a kind of interesting kind of topic. And it's obviously needs to be based on the software. But if you can get a similar thing in your organizational design and get that kind of the same pattern and heuristic at play in your teams, then you'll be able to kind of do clever things that Accelerate is preaching you to do. And if you don't, then you'll probably fail, in my experience, at you know, doing all the things that Accelerate is telling you should do because everything, you know, is all gummed up in the technology. And, you know, my team's treading on your team's toes because we can't get stuff out the door independently. That's where I spend quite a lot of my time these days.
Yeah, and that is the thing. Although it looks the simple heuristic, I think that you got to the trap pretty quick because yes, what do we have around the organization? And this is it, right? We usually look to the code. We now start looking to the organization. We have great research like Accelerate. I was talking with Ken Power, also did lots of research there, and there is a few folks across the ocean in Canada looking to value stream management for knowledge working. Yeah. So on same stuff. But also with your experience, how do you decouple these or your experience in a big organization versus a smaller organization, for instance?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I think, so sometimes it might seem counterintuitive and maybe this, so anyone listening can, there's two pieces of information. In my experience, because I'm a consultant, I never get kind of exposed to what might be the simpler things. Maybe it's small problems, but they're never, if someone thinks something is simple, they probably wouldn't pay a consultant to come in and look at it, right? So they probably try and fix it themselves, typically. So it's either big or complicated. So, and in my experience, it's, and again, maybe this is because I've done DDD, so maybe we'll talk quite a lot about DDD, but because there's lots of tools in there around about kind of finding seams and at different lots of different levels finding those seams. But in my experience, finding things at a higher level with a larger team is easier, and typically clearing things out, you know, if you can kind of, you know, if you've got multiple teams working and you can kind of see the touch points between the teams, you can even stand back as a consultant and sometimes just watch the communication patterns, see who's talking to who. Look at the commit history, see who's, you know, which bits of code are hot, which pieces, you know, when a release is coming up, which bits of code have to change altogether, who has to go into meeting rooms to coordinate things with who. These are really good kind of clues for like higher level, gross level kind of coupling and you know, where you don't want it. And then maybe lack of cohesion as well. If there's kind of a disparate lack of understanding of where where things ought to be. You know, you can also see people kind of questioning, oh, I've got a new feature, but I'm not really sure where this feature belongs. That's typically a sign of an architecture, maybe an organizational structure, which is kind of just organically grown, but hasn't really paid a conscious mind to which bits belong where. And so typically that's easier because you can see that, because the problems maybe in my experience are just bigger, because you can, you know, you can see human beings tripping over each other. Smaller problems, you need to look more at the code, right? So you need to kind of look down into the code themselves. But what's nice is, and where I like to go if I'm working with teams, and it's kind of where we are at the moment, actually, on my current client, we went in at a really gross high level, kind of did lots of, I was listening to the interview you did with Trond, and so we did a similar approach. So he was talking about DDD and bounded context, but also user story mapping and business capability mapping. When I joined, business capability mapping had already been done. So that was kind of one lens to look down on things from. We then came in and did DDD and some event storming. That was another lens. And then some of the UX folks had done user story mapping in the BAs. And we kind of used those to triangulate. So they didn't necessarily always agree, but they could split things up. And then when they did triangulate, and when, you know, we found this thing which kind of from all three angles looked cohesive, then we could pull those bits together. We knew it was worth the effort to go in with, you know, with the scalpels and literally slice out chunks of the code and pull them out into separate repositories, separate, you know, do all the hard work, put in anti-corruption layers, all of that kind of stuff, because we could see the autonomy that would come out the back of that for a team. And so that kind of thing. And then when we've got that large chunk, which might still be messy, but at least we've carved it out, then we can then kind of, and that's what we're doing now, go into a team and say, right, within your world, so like, forget about everyone else, we've maybe got some relationships between your stuff and another team, right? But we've got that captured through our strategic patterns with DDD, you know, like you've got an upstream relationship with this team and it's a customer supplier star relationship or whatever, or a shared kernel. We've got some shared kernels and stuff, which, so we haven't completely reduced our coupling, but we've begun to pull things apart. And at least when we overlap, we know we're more conscious about our overlaps. Then we're now working with individual teams. Some teams, they've got the easy stuff that's on the outside, like reporting, you know, things which were already conceptually in people's heads separate. They're off doing their own thing. We're now spending more time as consultants with certain teams. And typically they're teams which have really core bits of the business, which are kind of previously have touched loads of bits of the code base, or they're the bits which make the money. So they're not necessarily so technically complicated, but they're the bits that need to go fast, perform, scale, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of, that's my experience of that. The other thing that I kind of wanted to bring in quickly, I think there's another view of cohesion and coupling, which I've learned over the time. And I think DDD kind of picks up on this. If you, the real benefits of getting cohesion and coupling right, like high cohesion especially, is if you get high cohesion, you'll find there'll be concepts that will stick in the heads of the team, right? So if they understand this area, they'll understand what this thing is. They don't, and from a, you know, DDD perspective, it's kind of like, you know, aggregates or bounded context or something, but it's like this world. I know there's other things that are outside, but for me, this thing is my world. This is what this world means in this to me. This is what this component does. This is what this feature does. That's the benefit of cohesion and coupling, right? Because then that doesn't just give you a route to a cleaner architecture and something you can deliver in value streams. But it should, if you invest the time in it, give you the ability, you know, give you the skills in the team and the understanding to maintain that architecture going forward. Because, I mean, that's lots of the architectures we see, they didn't start off bad or messy or, you know, suboptimal. They got that way because they got fuzzy and the edges got blurred and stuff. And one good way to stop that happening is to get the people in the teams, not just the BAs or the product owners, but all of them, the devs, the QAs, everyone, for the things they own. If they grok what that stuff is, right? They're like, this is ours. This belongs to us. We know this isn't ours, so we go over there to get it and all that kind of stuff. I think that's maybe a lesser talked about bit of it, but the mental comprehension of the cohesion and the things that go together, I think, is a super important thing. And then that goes right down to code, right? So in individual classes and things, but I think that's a big yeah. thing.
And definitely, and I you were talking about growing organically, and I always remember the keynote from Kent Beck last year on DDD Europe, that as humans, we don't know other thing about growing organically. And what you were explaining is a gardener, right? You trim a bit here and you trim a bit there and you put a constraint not to things fall over, right? So things can grow. And also, you describe DDD at least two levels, but can now you be more explicit about the levels that you were talking? You were talking about code and patterns and there, but also you were talking about the strategic part. How do you take managers and developers, you talk a bit about developers, but managers on this journey as well?
That's a really good question. So it's something that, that I'm thinking about a lot at the moment, because it's especially so at ThoughtWorks. So I think there was, I don't know if you were there, but apparently someone said this year at DDD Europe, Eric Evans said that, every time he thinks DDD is kind of going to disappear into the background, something comes along and makes it popular again. So the new one is data mesh, right? So DDD is big in data mesh. Microservices was the one before that. Then it was CQRS before that, I think, et cetera, et cetera. Something always brings it back. And so what's interesting, my experience of DDD used to be I'd come in and we'd do a smaller piece of work for a team, like maybe an exemplar team, and we would go with them and we'd use the lower level tactical, as they're now known, but the, you know, the patterns around about entities, aggregates, value objects, maybe bounded contexts, but just as a means to kind of protect ourselves from the outside world. So we'd do more things like bubble contexts and stuff, you know, like we know there's a bunch of other messy stuff, but this is our project and we're going to succeed and deliver something clean and cohesive. And then we might step slightly beyond that. If there's two teams, we might scale up, right? And then another team comes on, and then we capture our relationship as a context map. And we do a little step into the world of, you know, multiple bounded contexts, context maps, and strategic patterns, right? So strategic patterns being the nature of the relationships between the various models, which might be different systems or might just be kind of, you know, different microservices that teams are building or whatever. But then, as you said, organizational design has become a lot more popular these days, right? So people are reading all the books. They're reading more about product-driven kind of development. They want streamlined companies. They want to have, you know, lean type product organizations where they, you know, someone has an idea in product land and then, you know, 3 days later, the product is out there and running, or the feature is delivered. And it turns out, as lots of people are discovering, lots of the strategic patterns, because they are people patterns, right? They're not technical patterns. They arise from the kind of the concept of a bounded context, which wraps code. But above that, you know, I can understand that as an exec, right? So then I can say, right, this could be your model, your map of A, your business architecture, which is also your technical architecture, but which also could be your human architecture and the whole, all three. So I'm writing an ADR actually at the moment, just to say that thing, which is, you keep asking us for a technical architecture, but you've already got one. It's called your business architecture. And what we're just producing is a slightly different flavored version of that diagram. But this is the kind of thing, right? And then it's interesting seeing which bits of the terminology have already spread into the kind of executive level, executive suite. Bounded context, I was surprised a few years ago to discover execs were already aware of. And things like Accelerate, team topologies, and a bunch of other kind of key texts have definitely pushed that into the exec's mindset. I guess also people like Alberto Brandolini kind of doing, there's some courses that Alberto, I think, has got for, like, you know, high level exec level conversations about all of this kind of stuff. And so what's interesting now is half the work I do, we go in at a high level and we do some kind of high level discovery, maybe event storming or something like that, to discover the bigger picture bounded context and the domains and subdomains. And other times we'll come in at the bottom. And lots of my work now is kind of making sure the two join up in the middle, because I've learned from experience, assuming that they just naturally will, because everyone's doing this thing called domain-driven design, doesn't always happen, right? So making sure that you're kind of frequently cross-referencing the two, giving the two feedback, seeing where they line up, where they don't line up, is kind of key. And that's exciting. That's kind of what some of the talks that I've done at conferences is all about. It's like large-scale DDD versus small-scale DDD, and joining the two, I think, is really interesting. And it's kind of, that's one of my things.
Yeah, indeed, because in my head, when you talk about that, I always think about communication pathways. Mm-hmm. Where do I want people to communicate? What is the, as you start, people that goes to a room to do a release or discuss an incident, how can we reshape these pathways to constrain the system?
Exactly. I mean, this is a few interesting things that makes me think about, actually, which is, number one, I'm rereading. So at my current client, three clients ago, I realized that I was the person doing DDD. And there's a talk that I gave with an ex-colleague, Gayathri Thiagarajan, about this at DDD Europe. I realized that me doing DDD in a room on my own, almost to your exact point, didn't work, right? Because the designs or the high-level strategic stuff, all of the ways I'd broken stuff down and all of the clever things I'd come up with, the developers weren't even aware of it. But even if they were, they had no means of taking these kind of key concepts that I'd done and taking it into code, right? So if it didn't ship, it didn't matter. And that's kind of, I've been pursuing that train of thought just as a general kind of way of doing architecture, maybe for the last two clients that I've worked on. The place I've been at the moment, I've been here almost 10 months, I think. And we've tried from the very start to take the approach that, number one, everyone needs to not only understand the architecture, but participate in architecture. So all team members. So I've tweeted about a kind of Twitter thread about this, which I can maybe share the link with afterwards. But like a thing which I kind of, as clickbait, called anarchistic architecture, but it's kind of anarchistic from a political sense, which was more like, you know, there is no hierarchy. There is no, you know, nobody can tell anyone what to do. So how do you set up architecture in that sense? And what do you need to do? And basically you need to formulate conversations, just like you said, right? The whole thing is about setting up the conversations and feeding the right information and the right context into those conversations. But the other thing I realized was DDD is a thing that lots of people have heard of, but very few people have read, that, you know, really grasped the core texts. So we set up a reading group where we're working our way one pattern or two patterns a week through the Blue Book. And it's taking quite a long time because the Blue Book's quite thick, right? The Eric Evans 2003 book. But what struck me is at every single level, like, you know, I said, and we both said that the strategic patterns, the high level patterns are people patterns, even in value objects, modules, you know, which is about, you know, use packages or namespaces in your code. Every single one is about the reason why as a human being you want to do that. And this brings it back to cohesion and coupling. The whole reason to do modules, for example, which like I said, is, you know, use packages in your code is another name for it. The reason to do that is so that you can lower the cognitive load for people, right? So that, and then you can give them two views of your code base. One is all of the packages, none of them expanded, right? So you can see a high-level view of your code base, package A, package B, package C. Or you can look inside one package and ignore all of the other packages and see the contents of that package. And so you can have these two things, two views within a single code base. And when I read that, and the reason why is for human beings, right? Not for some, you know, aesthetic reason or not for some compilation reason or structural reason. It's so that human beings can be in mode A, you know, and Kent Beck talks about these kind of things as well. You can be in mode A, high level, looking down. I want to see the big picture from whatever level of scale I'm at. Or I want to be in mode B where I'm down at the classes, at the individual functions. And again, it's coupling and cohesion, right? It's kind of just, you know, when I'm in this level of detail, I want to know all of these things and I almost want to forget about everything else. Or I want to kind of come out of that and see, look outside or look inside. And so to me, rereading the DDD book and realizing how much every single pattern and all of the narrative in between that Eric talks about, it's all there. You know, he's like, this stuff, human beings write code, right? Teams write code. This stuff is important. And I was struck by how much I'd forgotten about it.
Exactly, because that also, well, the Eric book is heavy, right? The first part is easier as software engineer. Yeah. Okay, well, more code patterns. But the second part, well, take me a few months and a few rereads to get there. And then after a few years, haha. But also what I see is that what you talk, the optimization for machines, we go crazy because also when people go towards the formal education, this is what we are being teach about. You need to optimize the normalization forms of your database. Fine, we have lots of performance that matter. Oh, you need to know how the VMs of your compile language works because, you know, allocations and memory. Mm. Who cares? We have the cloud, we can pay a few more cents. And I don't see, or at least I didn't experience, I'm now seeing here in Netherlands, someone in university pushing DDD and doing research with DDD. People that, okay, we did code, but code has a purpose. And the purpose is whatever our business is about, the name. And I don't see that. And that maybe it's why we get, and this is just a theory, it's why it's get to this messy state where we optimize to the machine, pre-optimize when we don't need to optimize, try to capture every use case, and does it work? It simply doesn't work. And you are an experienced person, a bit more years in the field that I am. We can see by the white hairs. Do you see a change on new generations of software engineers, or we are doing the sins of the past, keeping optimizing to the machine?
That's a really interesting question. I think it's we're at one of those points where it could go either way, I think, to be honest. I think it was very interesting when I was writing. So when lockdown happened, our consultancy suddenly were, you know, we were, all of our clients were like, the customers we had kept on going, and then some of the new customers paused for a little bit. So I was in that pause. So I was, luckily I got 3 or 4 weeks on the beach, which never happens in my entire career, to write a training course. So that's when I wrote the kind of first steps DDD training course. And so I assumed I'd learned DDD by drawing boxing lines, by doing UML, you know, modeling things out like that, and then I would turn it into code. And I spoke to a product person who'd been on the project with me before, and she said, that's a big, you know, if this course is a product, you've made a big assumption that the customers of your course, the people who are going to take this course, are, you know, think in boxes and lines, which was an awesome thing to point out. So I did a survey of thought workers, because I thought thought workers were, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, some of the greatest software engineers in the world, right? We must draw boxes and lines before we go straight to code. You know, how do we think about it? And very, very few people, sometimes when they're trying to explain something to a pair, when they're pair programming, or maybe they have to explain to their manager, but they'll jump straight to code, which isn't wrong, because it turns out you can write an entire course about DDD where you go straight to the code without, you know, jumping through some boxes and lines or whatever. And you can basically test drive it. And this, the examples are in the book, in code, and also in UML. But I think what was interesting was, so like I say, there's less modeling at a kind of graphical level. And I think some people take that as a reason to not have to model, you know, do domain modeling, right? Or model the concept, not the technological aspects, just like you said, right? But the technology or the lower level implementation or abstractions, but model the business problem we're trying to solve, which is the heart of DDD, right? So it's like solving the problem for your user, not the problem that Kafka's given you, because, you know, it's, you know, like when Zookeeper has to do a leadership election or something, and Kafka gets thrown into chaos, right? That's not the business don't care about that problem. They care about the fact that, you know, you need to convert policies and all this kind of stuff in insurance or something. And so there are still definitely people, and this is across from clients and at ThoughtWorks, there's still people who are, you know, super junior graduates, people who've come out of code camps and all this kind of stuff, who do think like that. But there's equally other people, and again, junior, senior, fresh into development, been around a long time, who don't. And it's even addressed in the Eric Evans DDD book. He's like, you know, we're solving the wrong problems. We like to solve the hard problems, which are in our domain, which is technology, right? So we get naturally drawn to this stuff. And so therefore, and it's in the foreword, I think, to his book, it's like, you know, but there's another bigger problem, which is technically why we're being paid, which is to solve this business problem. And I think maybe with the resurgence of DDD, and I definitely think it is coming back again because of Accelerate, because of team topologies, because of data mesh and all these other things, and hopefully because of things like my course, people do get permission to say, okay, we should model the business problem. We should understand this. We should keep the level of abstraction here. And then maybe we plummet into the lower level abstractions elsewhere where we need to, but focus first on the business problem. I hope that's, like I say, this is my big mission, right? That's why I keep tweeting about annoying things and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, and keep tweeting. what I also see is that we are circling back to the basics and back to Kent Beck, right? And XP.
100%.
Even if we pick up XP, didn't have the fancy patterns or the strategic patterns from DDD because evolved, right? But this is what Kent Beck says. Get cross knowledge, people that know about problem and solution, do a bit of design, code it, even called self-tested code, the original name. If not, throw away. So, yeah, and this idea have probably 30 years or something like that, because the idea itself. And we circle back, right? Now what I see, especially with DDD, is that Patterns libraries went crazy, right? Start with Gang of Four, and then everyone started defining all small patterns. Do we really need all of these small patterns? I don't think that we are solving problems that NASA solves. That is where DD kicks in with strategic ones, where then team topologies and build on top also from DevOps. And I think that we are starting, because I also think that today, especially with cloud, right, anyone can spin something, and the interconnection of systems. Things are getting to a high degree of complexity. They are not complicated like Knevin. They are complex that it's impossible for us to understand as humans. We don't have that space. And that is where DDD kicks in with these, at least strategic parts. At least can we understand the world around us? Direct connections.
I mean, it's like even before I really understood, when I was beginning my journey with DDD, I wrote a blog post for my previous employer, so the one before ThoughtWorks. And it was, I think it was a post about why we like microservices. And one of the reasons we said was microservices were human sized. The whole point being, and team sized, right? So a human being, an individual human being, you know, they it fit because you could get your head around it, right? There is, like you say, this whole world of complexity, but here in this space, I can kind of know and understand what this thing needs to be. And, you know, hopefully it's an aggregate, right? So therefore you've got a pattern which goes around with that. And, you know, it knows what it needs as input. It knows what it owns. It knows what it can control and what it can't control, what its ultimate valid states are and things. And that's, like you say, I think that's why DDD and other things like this, you know, bounded context gives the teams, you know, a similar kind of thing, right? So a team can have a bunch of collection of things which it belongs to, and clear relationships with other teams in the outside world. I think we sometimes lose that. And like you say, we engineer ourselves into complexity and then wonder why we can't deliver anything, or it's super brittle, you know, like one tiny mistake over here breaks something over there just because we haven't really thought about the individual thing and the individual stuff that it does. It's I mean, like you said as well, going back to XP, it's, again, rereading it, it's super interesting to see how embedded in XP DDD is. It just feels like you say XP, and you could argue, I mean, and I've had a thought workers annoyingly point out, which is true, is DDD not just XP and TDD especially, right? So Ken Beck's TDD book, has he not just taken that and put a lot of more extra pages in, you know, kind of just taken the ideas and run with them and kind of taken them to a natural conclusion? And Eric Evans has obviously added far, far more. But the kernel is there. The truth is there in the XP patterns and TDD and some of the other things. It's just taking it, you know, if we do this and this, you know, we apply this principle at this level, we get this. If we apply the same principle at this level, we get this. And I think, I mean, that's one of the things that really interests me is, it's not a collection of patterns. It's a system of patterns. They group together. They sit together. They naturally, if you do this thing and this thing, then you're probably going to end up here. And if you do, then there's a pattern for this. That's what I think is beautiful about that. And I don't think there's not so much, this is another of my crusades, there's not so much thinking about that at the moment. I think some of the old, like, again, Rebecca Verstbrock, right, who you've had on again, right? She's known this stuff. She's just waiting for everyone to come back to what she's already known and never forgot. And other people like Ruth Mallon and other people, right? They know, and they're kind of waiting for people to remember what they never stopped telling them. There you go, let's be good. So, this is the thing that's kind of, I'm just kind of just catching up on all this stuff. But it's super, you know, all of these things are there. You've just got to go, okay, take a step back and see them. And like I say, they're not individual. They fit together in some kind of beautiful kind of Christopher Alexander pattern language type way. I think it's very interesting, and more, right? Team topology is putting stuff on the top and all the different view.
And even last year, I also read, because I'm mad about patterns. I thanks to Rebecca. So I read the book from the folks of Container Solutions, the Cloud Native Transformation. You read the title and you go, but then it's just a collection of patterns. And what they did was beautiful. That was, okay, you want to do a transformation. Executive level, you need to do these. You have these patterns to play around. And they almost tell a story. But then they go to low level. Okay, now you want to do cloud native stuff. By the way, you need to master these and that. And you need to be agile. Oh, and by the way, you can use project management there, but design there with this. And it's pretty amazing the book that they put. And they create actually a pattern language because they submit that to the pattern language conference.
Oh, cool.
And actually is recognized as a pattern language and was the first one that I saw even more comprehensive than DDD. And it's pretty, pretty amazing.
Yeah, because I've read it. It's been on my list to, but I'd heard similar things about it. And this is the thing, that it's the because that thing, it's a language, because lots of the mistakes I see, I mean, maybe you see the same thing as consultants, right? We never see someone who's, you know, people who just can't write code or can't deliver software, right? They'll have had good intentions, they'll have had good skills to start with, and at some point they'll have either been so successful or they've become big or had to run so fast that they end up getting into a mess, or they put things in because they think that's what they do because that's what the industry does, right? So they add things. But what's interesting about languages, it's kind of like, you know, you probably, if you're here, you probably need, you know, you should then look at the pattern and see, do you have this situation? And it'll be like, if you do, go down this path. If you don't, then you can go down this path. That's really interesting. I mean, even we're doing team topologies with our client. And so we kind of did version one of the transformation. Well, version zero, we took a team and proved that the whole, you know, stream alignment and refactoring bits of the architecture would work. Version two, multiple teams running in parallel. But we didn't have a platform team. Version three, now the teams are running fast enough. Now we're in the process of putting in a platform team because the need for the team has emerged. Maybe version four of the organization is, you know, we have the dedicated subsystems or whatever, I can't remember what they're called in team topologies, but the, you know, specific teams that own kind of shared components. Again, we don't have that need at the moment. Maybe we do. What's nice is, again, just like with code, right, we're refactoring the organization. We're not going... We're in, this is what it was at the start, now this is what it is at the end. We're kind of looking, based on where we are now, this is probably the next shape of the organization. And we're not throwing human beings around from team to team, but we're kind of going, okay, there needs to be a team here. And so this person in that team, this person in that team, and this person in that team kind of were the platform team. They were the people who were building the shared components and talking to each other. They set up a channel and, you know, communicated. So maybe we hire extra people and give them the remit to be the platform team and a product manager, right? To ask the teams what they want. So again, that's kind of, again, treating, I'm not naive enough to think you treat organizations like code, but kind of looking at the services an organization provides and then looking at, you know, do we need this service? Do we need a different way of doing communication? Do we need a different way of doing decision-making? Do we need a different way of controlling access to resources? If we does what we have work? If it does, keep going. If it doesn't, what can we refactor to make decision making work better or communication work better? And that's kind of where we're at the moment, and it seems to be working. We've been there, like I say, 9 months. So
yeah, no, and it's pretty cool, right? Making things agile. Not with a capital agile, but being really agile.
Yeah.
And I think that you wrap very well the interview with those three things. I don't need to ask a summary. So the last question, are the resources that you recommend to our audience?
So cool. So I thought about this quite a lot. So I had a few in advance, but one that I forgot. I would definitely recommend, and even to people, so I understand, because we're reading this with people whose English isn't their first language, but Eric Evans's DDD, Domain-Driven Design, Tackling Complexity in the Heart of Software, is a really good book. And you don't have to read it cover to cover. I've reread bits of it all the time. It's one of those books, like Kent Beck's TDD, by example. You read it, you know, and it will mean one thing to you at one time, and then you read it again, it'll mean another thing to another time. Even just reading the foreword, the introduction, and the first chapter on ubiquitous language, that will explain a bunch of stuff which you've probably misheard from elsewhere, because when people talk about ubiquitous language, they get it wrong all the time. That alone might change how you'd write software. So that's the first one. On the podcast front, so this is a little bit of a kind of tip for some friends. I was lucky enough, and some people might remember this, there used to be a podcast called The Java Posse back in the day, quite a long time ago. The Java Posse then started an Open Spaces conference in Colorado, and that changed its name to the Winter Tech Forum. Bruce Eckel, of Thinking in Java, Thinking in C++, Atomic Kotlin, Atomic Scala fame, he's the person who runs it, although it's an Open Spaces conference, so he books the hall and then people come. he started a new podcast called Happy Path Programming, which is a really nice kind of, you know, because this is all kind of like about theoretical and kind of patterns and heuristics and things. Theirs is a lot more lower level moaning about how Gradle works type thing. And it's kind of, I've actually started in alternating this podcast with that podcast, because it's kind of like, you know, it's like what it feels like to like write the code at the keyboard, and then this is the kind of the theoretical, you know, the high level stuff, and then kind of come back down and back up. And then the third one, I'm trying to think of, there's a few things that I was going to recommend, but possibly just another classic, I think, like, although I would recommend The Cloud Native Patterns, but I haven't read it, so that's obviously on my list still. But Kent Beck's TDD by Example is another book which completely transformed how I thought about code, how I thought about patterns, how I thought about XP, all of that kind of stuff. And again, that is a lot easier to read. So no matter what your first language is, Kent Beck's TDD by Example. And code along with it as well, right? So I've coded along with it, and I've re-implemented, because I think it's in Python and Java, but I went back and learned Rust by re-implementing the second half of the book in that language. So it's good fun.
It is. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Yeah. And with this, we get to the end of the episode. I want to thanks for your time and sharing your knowledge here. Well, it's pretty cool to have you.
Yeah, no, it's great to be here. Thanks very much.
You can follow us on Twitter at @scraftspodcast, visit our website softwarecraftspodcast.com, or follow our page on LinkedIn. Hope to get you next week.